conference previews continue as college basketball season is approaching by the day. Official practice started today. We are recording here on Monday night, 6 weeks exactly from the start of the college basketball season on November 6th. Today was the first day of 20-hour weeks, so that is what people tend to define as the first day of practice, even though teams are practicing for 8 hours a week throughout the off season and summer, and then early in time on campus. But we've got a nice technicality to celebrate as a milestone as we get closer to college basketball season. Media days here coming up in the next couple of weeks. It is all flying by. I mean, I spent all weekend betting over at the BovadaSportsbook.com on college football, and you look up, you're already through week four. I mean, teams are a third of the way through college football season, Brad. It's wild how quick we're getting through this off season, and we're getting towards crunch time where everybody needs their waivers and lock it in.
Either you dabbled with Colorado on the old Bovada?
I did not. I mean, I had betted against them the first 2 weeks, and I lost both times. And I was like, all right, I'm done. I'm not touching this. I should have, because it was so obvious they're going to get blown out by Oregon. I will say, and this would be like a fun, like, after dark podcast topic, if you will. What would be the personality? Like, who would be the former NBA player or former elite college basketball player who could make the entire sports world lose their minds the way that everyone has lost their mind about Deion Sanders?
So a bunch of podcasts have posited this question. I think I've heard like three or four different, you know, Penny's probably the easiest one. People say Shaq. The past like 3 weeks or so, I've been such a junkie. I've just been literally at work every second. I need content in my ears, whether it's college basketball, television, something. So I've listened to like everything. So I don't remember who said Shaq, but one of the podcasts said Shaq.
Well, so what's crazy to me is this. You mentioned Penny. So people talk about Penny, but like, is Penny being in college coaching like a big deal to people? Well, like, he's coaching at a major brand, right? Memphis is a probably top 25 college basketball brand. He's an all-time player at that school. He's a former NBA All-Star. He's a big personality. And like, when he was hired, it was like, wow, that's a big deal. And like, there was a little bit of buzz off of like the Wiseman stuff. But like, I'm really not convinced that it's been all that impactful. Like, when Penny has good things happen, it's not like a huge cultural debate, right? Like, Deion Sanders is a huge cultural debate right now. And I really wonder, like, who could be comparable, right? Like, if Penny isn't, what would be?
I guess I don't know football well enough, but Deion Sanders, he's not like a LeBron, Michael Jordan level football player, right? He's like a...
No, he'd Penny be close to like Shaq level. Shaq level, yeah.
Shaq level, okay. That's higher than I would have thought. But yeah, I don't know. Because you know, the NBA in terms of the... kind of the player's brand, it's very modern based, right? Like, because of all the social media and guys trying to build their brand and all the drama with the Shams and Woj bombs and all that stuff, you know, guys like James Harden and, you know, those guys, we like know a lot of quirks about them, or like Kevin Porter throwing the soup, right? Or, you know, there's like little, or no, that was... Was it J.R. Smith who threw the soup and Kevin Porter threw something else? Oh, no, it was Kevin Porter got into a fight because they changed his locker. You know, there's, you know, we get all these tidbits now that we didn't get, you know, in the 90s and earlier eras. So at least personally, it feels very recency bias in terms of how notable and kind of popular these players are.
I think... I think it's like impossible that LeBron would ever coach a college basketball team, but if he did, obviously that would be a crazy deal. Obviously, he is no longer with us, but I don't think there's like a 0%. I mean, I guess Kobe never played college basketball, so I don't see why he would like see the value in doing this. But like, I think Kobe would have certainly elicited these type of reactions if he had ever coached college basketball. But like, I can't really think of one. Like, I really can't. It's truly nuts. I mean, look, like, and it's not even just like, oh my God, like everyone cares and everyone's watching. Like the media has literally lost its mind. Like the things that like otherwise intelligent people are saying about Colorado or about Deion or about like college football and how it's being is like legitimately insane. Like Josina Anderson, and we're not going to go down this road too far, but like Josina Anderson is a like nationally acclaimed NFL reporter, and she tweeted like what would be happening right like when Oregon was up 35-0 against Colorado, like, oh, you know, this would be different if Travis Hunter was playing. They're on 35 points. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, what is happening? Like, people have lost their minds. So I don't know. It'll be interesting. And the storyline is not dying, certainly. So if you feel so inclined, feel free to bet a bunch of money on Bovada against Colorado this week, or on Colorado if you're still in on the storyline. They play that game will have a lot of points to play USC this week. It'd be a lot of fun. I will say here would be another hilarious poll question before we launch into our episode, and it's I guess fitting because we're doing the Pac-12 today. Is there two more different personalities between football and basketball coach in America than Deion Sanders and Tad Boyle?
I mean, I don't know much about Tad Boyle's personality.
I think that's the point.
I do remember when he said he doesn't like using the transfer portal. But
Tad Boyle is probably one of the more boring people in college basketball, like at least on perception alone.
He got to coach, I think, back-to-back FIBA U18, U19 teams.
He's very well respected in like the coaching profession. Like coaches think very highly of Mr. Boyle.
Well, like, I think of like if we were ranking coaches, I mean, he wouldn't be in our top 30, I don't think.
No. Definitely not.
And I guess we'll see, because Deion famously, right, he ran off the whole team.
Yes.
Similar to Ricky P, we'll see. We'll see if Ricky P can have the same level of success.
I will say, and we've talked about the kind of success of, like, there's limits to how good you can get by building through the portal only. I will say, I think in basketball it's a lot easier than in football, because in football, one, you just, like, the mass quantity of players, and two, you need, like, it is very hard to get really good, like, interior players, right? Like, Deion had access to a quarterback, his son. He had access to skill position players who wanted to play there. But, like, to stack elite offensive and defensive line talent is really hard. Whereas, like, in basketball, like, you can get two or three good players, right? Like, people want to play Rick Pitino. They get two or three good players. All right, they're immediately, like, good and relevant. So, I think it's a difference. But, anyway, it's been a wild storyline. We should get into the Pac-12, which is dying. We have one last year potentially of Pac-12 preview pods, so let's enjoy it while we still got it. And Brad, the league coming off a 4-bid year looked for a while like it was 2-3. Then Arizona State snuck in with that buzzer beater against Arizona in late February. Interesting league, though. I mean, it's so funny. The league is on its quote unquote deathbed, and it's having a banner year in football. I don't know that I would say banner year in basketball, but I do feel like there's a real chance this thing is pretty good and pretty watchable this year, or at least better than it's been.
Well, you know, at least at the top, I'm fascinated to watch UCLA. I mean, UCLA has broken everyone's brain, you know, into two, where, you know, you're kind of giving UCLA the benefit of the doubt, but the roster wasn't there. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, by the way, they're pulling two of the best young players in Europe, two, you know, plus starters, maybe a lottery pick and a Dave Mara. And then you're looking at this roster and it's like, They have a ton of talent here, but it's all super young. So that's certainly going to be a fascinating situation to watch. I'm sure. I believe they're playing Marquette in Maui, that late game on that Monday. So I think I'll be front and center for that one. I don't know their early schedule, if they have something more compelling before then, but that should be a great test, great opportunity to see them against a good team.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be tested early. I think they have the Maui slate. They also have, I believe they go to Villanova, if I'm not mistaken. So this is not, I mean, this is a team that probably will need some time, and they're going to get thrown into the fire. And USGLA is actually where we will start, if that, because they came in first last year, 18-2, go to the Sweet 16 despite the Jalen Clark injury, could have very easily beaten Gonzaga in that game, wild back and forth affair, but eventually come up short on the Strother three. But yes, a loaded. But as you alluded to, four international players coming in, one from France, Elaine Fibule, one from Spain, Ade Mara, one from Turkey, Burke Bujutinsel, and then one from Serbia, Jan Vide. Add in Utah transfer Lazar Stefanovic. This is a completely new team with four starters gone. They bring back Bona, but for the most part, I mean, completely reworked group. They have a tough schedule, as you mentioned, Maui, Villanova on the road, Ohio State in Atlanta, Maryland at Pauley. So this is one of the most interesting teams in my mind in college basketball. Start with the first question of just like one, will everyone make it to opening tip-off and be eligible? There are some, I don't know that there's huge concern, but there is, I don't believe everything is fully finalized, that everyone will be good to go of this international group. And there's all sorts of different, from amateur status to academics to NCAA clearinghouse, like, there's multiple places where things can go wrong. So first of all, does just everyone get to campus? Number two, how in the world do you mesh all these guys? And number three, what's the fit like? And I think the last part is where we should probably focus our energy, because it's not just rampant speculation, Brad. But like, you've got a returning former five-star center average 8-5 as a freshman. And you have this 7'3", like, supposed, not like Jokic type, but like, because that's unfair, but like a big passing big man in Mara. You have a combo forward in Bujutinsel. You have these big wings. You have high level freshmen. Like, they have a ton in the front court. Just how does it fit? Do they have a shooting? I think all those things are huge questions for this UCLA team. And because we haven't seen really any of these guys in a college basketball environment, it's just hard to know.
Right. So their upside is enormous, right? Because they have two potential first round picks with Bona and Mara. Bujutinsel might be there too. People love Jan Vide's upside. He's like a 6'6 combo guard. It's funny. The 24/7 podcast had UCLA beat writer on to describe their international crop, and he basically said for every player, like, Mick Cronin, super excited, he loves this guy, but the concern is shooting, which makes Lazar Stefanovic such an important piece here to add some shooting and some much needed experience to this group of freshmen and sophomores. In terms of the fit, I think they'll go Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert, where Bona and Mara will start both halves, and then they will immediately sub one of them out and then kind of alternate from there. So they'll each play like 25 minutes, 26 minutes a game.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Mostly separate, and then Bujutinsel would slide down to the four and play a lot. And I've heard great things about Sebastian Mack. Mentioned Vide too, so they're again, super young, but the bench looks talented. Starting lineup looks super talented. How is this group going to gel?
Yeah, so I do think it's interesting to try to sort of read between the lines on some Cronin comments. And you mentioned how excited they seem to be. Cronin has been very, like, outwardly pro this international recruiting style. And his main thing is always, they can be coached. I can coach them. I can yell at them. They've been yelled at before. Like, I think he did a radio interview in LA, and I listened to the whole thing, and it's like, yeah, like, these coaches are, like, in gyms at 14, like, on the hot seat coaching teenagers, like, smoking cigarettes and, like, screaming at kids. Like, these kids won't be afraid of me. I'm nice compared to, I think it was one of his quotes, I'm nice compared to the coaches that a lot of these kids had growing up. And I think reading between the lines, that has to be taken at least somewhat as a shot at Peyton Watson and Amari Bailey, right? Who both had some severe difficulties, particularly early in their seasons, gelling into college basketball under Mick. And really, that was the question when Mick took the job, was how would Mick acquire talent if he's not able to coach McDonald's All-Americans easily? And because style, you know, mentality-wise, it's just a little bit different, right? He wants guys who've been in the system. He wants guys who are physical. He wants guys who defend. That's not what you're getting when you're recruiting an American McDonald's All-American. He's making a bet here that these guys will be different. I think largely they will be, but I don't think it's as much of a given as people seem to be anticipating. And there are still some, like, huge systematic things in terms of style of play that I think will take a while for him, for these young guys to pick up.
Well, a couple things. First, I believe it was on Field of 68, they alluded to an unnamed coach being most likely Sean Miller. Talk about how, like, the or maybe, again, I've listened to so much the past 3 weeks, I can't keep it all straight. So maybe they did name him, I don't know. But basically, he was saying that the international guys at the same age are much more skilled.
Yes.
Which may be true. But in recent college basketball history, has that borne out that international guys are better pound for pound than American guys in terms of their impact and help on the team winning? Like, I know we've kind of joked that it's like, oh, if the guy doesn't play right away, he's going to be back at his home country after a year. I think somebody's, you know, let's get somebody to research and dive into the numbers here. Dive into the personnel, and, you know, are you actually better off getting these guys? I honestly can't say.
It's also hard because I think the level of international player accessible to college basketball has increased with NIL. Like, right. Obviously Ivo Simović was critical in assembling this group for UCLA before he took the Raptors assistant job. But I also think it's worth noting that these guys weren't locks to come to college basketball. They probably weren't coming to college basketball if it wasn't to UCLA. And I'm not sure they were coming to UCLA without getting paid. So, you know, I think that's a factor as well. Like, we just don't have I don't think there has been a team that has gone this heavy into one international class, particularly a couple of them who are treated as one and duds. I can't think of one, right? So this is truly kind of untested waters, and it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. I will say, you look at a lot of the sports books right now, you see a lot of numbers like 35-1 to win the national title for UCLA. And that feels to me like a reasonable value. Like, it's high risk. Yes, like, there's a chance that this team completely combusts, but they have a legitimate coach. They're a powerhouse. They have NBA talent. I may just kind of fire up Bovada and see if I can pull this thing off, because I think they've got at least Final Four potential here.
So I guess it would depend on who the other teams are in that range for me to kind of put the 35-1 in context, but I mean, between Vidé, Berkay, and Marat, the consensus seems to be like those are three like very good starting level college players up to stars.
And I actually think Dylan Andrews has been really underrated throughout this. Like Dylan Andrews had a very nice freshman year behind a really good player in Tiger Campbell. And it doesn't feel like there's been a lot of dialogue about him being a legit breakout candidate. I think he's going to have a really good year. Because I love what I saw from him.
Now with the transfer portal, right, even more so than before, like fans have to see it before they'll even entertain it.
Yeah.
Like I've seen so many people, you know, dismiss Samson Johnson on UConn. I've seen obviously Providence fans dismiss Rafael Castro to be the backup center for Providence. I've seen national people dismiss Jaden Pierre to be the point guard for Providence. Right, like all these guys, where in a past era it was just natural that guys get better. You know, guys take that step every year. Now, especially with the best teams being able to just transfer portal recruit over everybody, it's very tough to make a projection when you haven't seen it before.
Yes, agreed. Any more on UCLA, or should we move to Arizona?
Well, I guess if they had brought back either Amari Bailey or Tiger Campbell, do you think we would be talking about them as like one of the elite teams up there with Purdue and Duke and Kansas?
Yes. Particularly Tiger.
We'll see. I cannot wait to watch this team.
All right. I have UCLA third in the Pac-12, 15th nationally. I think that 15th is probably higher than a lot of people have them. Curious where you are.
I have them third in the Pac-12 and 21st nationally.
I'm surprised neither of us went all in, but I couldn't quite get there.
Well, I mean, what's all in? Like winning the league?
Win the league, yeah.
I like Arizona there. I don't know if we're on it.
That's where we're headed. So let's talk Arizona. Arizona 28-7. Trip to the NCAA tournament, number 2 seed. I think exceeded expectations from the preseason. And then they crapped the bed against Princeton. 59-55, disastrous game. 2 years in a row now that they get a top 2 seed and don't live up to their quite full potential. I do think...
I mean, 16 year one is fine. It's good.
I mean, as a 1 seed, it's not great, but yes. They also had that poor performance against TCU that probably should have lost the game on, like, you know, the NCAA tournament success has not matched the regular season production. This is another flipped roster. They lose Azulis Tubelis, who's, you know, an All-American. Kirk Reset, point guard, is off to West Virginia. Courtney Ramey off to the pros. But you bring back Umar Ballo and Pell Larson, a pair of, you know, key contributors and starters. They also go heavy international. They bring in several key guys, including Motiejus Krivas from Lithuania and Paulius Morauskis. Those are two of the guys to watch. Caleb Love, mercurial, polarizing, whatever the words you'd like to use. He comes in from North Carolina. He's a presumed starter here. They also added, and a guy I think who's probably underrated, is Keyshawn Johnson from San Diego State, who I think has a chance to really improve his numbers by playing in this system. I mean, Tommy Lloyd's offense, I think, is well-suited for a guy like Keyshawn Johnson, who could run the floor, who could attack off the dribble. He's not overly skilled. He doesn't have to be, though, in this system. I think he's going to get a lot of easy ones. He's going to get a lot of putbacks and bunnies. I think Keyshawn Johnson will be the rare guy who transfers up and sees his production increase. But a lot of this here is on the backcourt with Love as a question mark, and certainly Kylan Boswell, who we both are buying on the breakout. How good is he? If those two guys live up to it, I think this is a team that will once again be in that 1 or 2 seed type conversation.
So first, on Caleb Love, I was appalled if people had him as a top 100 player in the country. Like, you can't have it both ways. Either he's the reason for UNC's downfall, or he's actually secretly very good. And, you know, I'm sure those same people that ranked him, you know, would crap on other players for not being efficient enough taking bad shots. So I'm not a huge Caleb Love guy. I guess we'll start there. But where I think this Arizona team's going to excel is the front court. I love the Johnson-Balo pairing. They're big. They're physical. I mean, this team's going to crush the offensive glass. Then they got, you know, the bench with Vizar and Krivas. I mean, they got huge dudes. Pretty skilled dudes. Pretty versatile dudes. Johnson gives you more versatility. Balo's got some skill. Vizar and Krivas, I think, are supposed to have a lot more skill. We'll see how much they play as young guys. But I think this backcourt's going to be really good. You mentioned we're both on the Boswell train. I loved his floor game last year, and I think now as a starter, he's going to take a huge jump. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Jaden Bradley beats out Caleb Love for the two guards for that. You know, maybe Love starts symbolically, maybe Bradley takes over late or something, but I could see their best path forward is Bradley and Boswell. You know, he's kind of a forgotten five-star guy as well. And then Larson can shoot it. He didn't break out like he was supposed to, but he played a ton last year. So this team has a ton of experience. You know, Bala was one of the best bigs in the country last year. Johnson played the national championship. What they may lack in shooting, you know, with the kind of two big front court there, they're going to make up for with power and offensive rebounding. So I like Arizona to win this league. I'm buying Tommy Lloyd as a coach. He has the two big things figured out dating back to, you know, the past 2 years with Tubelis and, you know, everyone there. So I have him, I think, eighth nationally too.
Yeah, I have him ninth nationally, first in the Pac-12. I think the Love thing is interesting just because I think Tommy Lloyd's, one, in probably a better position to hold him accountable than Hubert Davis was. I think, two, it's a better system for him in that they're going to fly up and down the floor. He's going to get a lot of early offense opportunities. And, you know, I think the third point I would make with Caleb Love is, like, there is, to me, a clear need for this type of guy on this team. Kylan Boswell is not, like, a leading scorer, right? I mean, maybe you just say this front court is going to carry the day. But I think when you watched Arizona last year, the thing you said that was the concern, the thing that was going to hold them back, was that they didn't have that elite guard. And not every night is Caleb Love going to be the elite guard. But think about all the things that Arizona is able to do with Ben Mathurin. I know they're not the same player. Mathurin is more explosive athletically. But they gave him a lot of freedom to create shots, gave him a lot of opportunities to run off screens and be a shooter, let him attack an early offense. And it was amazing what he was able to do. I mean, we both were surprised by how good Ben Mathurin was in that second year, because we felt like he was getting overrated. He didn't have enough game. Caleb Love has the game. So I'm kind of buying marginally the Caleb Love thing, that it will work, or at least that they will be able to say, screw this, we're playing Jaden Bradley or Morauskas or KJ Lewis or someone like that if it's not working, which North Carolina never really could do.
When Love was looking for a school, I was joking that he should go to an offensive rebounding school where he could take all the shots. Now, I was saying like Mississippi State, and then have just two, or a TCU, and then have two bigs just go get the offensive rebounds. And he kind of did that here. So, again, I'm not buying Caleb Love, but I'm buying a ton of Arizona stock.
Arizona, to give some context, we talked about UCLA at 35-1. Arizona's at 25-1 in most of the places I've seen. So another one where, you know, I think for a top 10 team, that's worth rolling the dice over Bavada. You know, I think that's good value on a top 10 team. I don't think Tommy Lloyd's a bad tournament coach. I think he'll be fine.
So now, do we think that Bovada is going to have USC with better tournament odds?
I think
probably, right?
I don't think so, from what I've seen. Let me look.
Now that Bronny James is out, they went back to earth in the odds.
I don't know if the odds, I mean, maybe there was some early just like unseriousness, if you will. Like, let's see what we can do. But USC is our next team. This is a good transition. USC, like, I think people have been kind of realistic about USC. Like, where they have seemed to settle in the rankings consensus is exactly where I would have ranked them with or without Brownie. They have two tremendous guards in Isaiah Collier and Boogie Ellis. They have a third really interesting one in Kobe Johnson. They have some questions at the four and the five. But they have enough talent to be pretty, pretty interesting. And I don't know that they have like quite the level of group that they had in that and the Evan Mobley team. But I also don't think we thought that the Evan Mobley team had that level of talent at the time. Yeah, USC is in that 35-1 range, just like UCLA, over at some of the sports books like Bovada.
So is the big team that's getting the unwarranted push, is that St. John's then? Where
yeah,
Rick Pitino has gone from, you know, elite coach to like God level, you can double your talent level overnight. Head coach. I mean, it's really gotten out of hand, I think. But anyway, we're not talking Big East today. We're talking USC. And kind of as you said, that backcourt of Ellison and Isaiah Collier, two top 25, top 30 players in the country. Collier, obviously a top 10 pick caliber guy. I think some of the draft nerds have him a little bit lower, but I don't know if I've seen him outside the top 10. I don't think they have him in the first tier. Obviously, Ellis is good. Kobe Johnson's coming along as a draft prospect as well. They love his defensive versatility. Had a better year than I would have. Well, had a better year than I've remembered he did last year. Not 9-5 with 36% and started 29 games. So he'll take that same role. Joshua Morgan, I know you were a little worried about the front court. I take it it's because Iwuchukwu is still hurt. I saw the other day.
Yeah.
But Morgan started this year. And
I don't think they have a true four. Morgan's a good player.
You don't like DJ Rodman?
I don't think he's a true four. I think he's a small four.
And then the rest of that front court, I mean, it's two top 50 recruits with Key Johnny Wright, who got his feet wet last year. I know that you were never a Wright guy. And Arrington Page, who I believe is high school teammates with Collier. I think that's the connection there.
Yes.
Either way, I mean, even without Iwuchukwu, that's a four-man front court that has a starter from last year, a Pac-12 starter on a solid team, and then two top 50 recruits. Without Bronny James, the backcourt is a little light. But at the end of the day, I mean, two of the best guards in the country on your team. A lot of NBA talent, veteran team. They have shooting. They really look like a pretty complete team. I mean, what would you even say that they're missing?
True power forward, but that's minor. I'll say this. Like, I think Boogie Ellis has gotten underrated over the last couple of years because the start at Memphis was so funky. He wasn't very good. He was inefficient. He was blamed, I think, for a lot of their struggles. But he was a good player as a junior. He was a great player as a senior. And this was a USC team that was not that talented. Him and Drew Peterson. And for him to average almost 18 points per game efficiently with a good assist to turnover ratio, shooting 39% from three at volume, a lot of it off the dribble. Like, he is a legitimately excellent guard. And you add in another two playmakers, right? I mean, not only do you have the Collier playmaking ability. But you also have Kobe Johnson, who sneakily averaged 2.6 assists per game last year and has a little bit in his game in terms of his ability to play make for others. Like, I just love any opportunity to have a team with three different guys who you really feel like you can trust to handle the ball in big spots. And I think USC has that. And they're going to be good defensively at the rim. And they were second in the country in two-point defense last year. A lot of that is Josh Morgan being a top 20 rim protector in the country. They'll have that once again. So if you're going to win at the rim defensively and you're going to have guards who can make plays offensively, you're going to be pretty darn good. That's why I have USC 12th nationally, second in the Pac-12.
And just DJ Rodman last year in conference play, obviously the Pac-12, as he was at Washington State, 10 points a game, 6 rebounds, 43% from three in 33 minutes a game.
Sneakily better than Trey White.
Yeah. And then you mentioned Morgan in the conference play with 7, 4, and 2 blocks. They have guys off the bench who can make a jump. Yeah, I mean, this is a really exciting team here. Yeah, probably their best since the Evan Mobley team. Yeah, I don't remember where I had ranked that team in the preseason, if I was super high on them or not. I honestly don't remember.
I remember being down on them.
You know, people really are kind of out on Andy Enfield. The three-man weave guys are always like, oh, you can't get past 40th and KenPom and this and that. But at the end of the day, I mean, he makes a tournament pretty much every year recently. He recruits well. He produces pros. I mean, you could do a lot worse than him. I have USC 16th, but I may move them up a couple spots. I have Nova and Mississippi State right in front of them. I may jump them to 14. But that's a 4 seed. I think that'll be a nice year for this team. And they have upside to go even higher. I mean, as we were saying, they don't really have holes on this roster. They have everything you could want in terms of skill sets. So exciting year for the final Pac-12 go around with the top three teams there.
All right, that brings us next to Oregon, 21-15, NIT appearance, second straight year missing the NCAA tournament, which I think would be surprising if you just looked at like the way that they've recruited lately. I mean, they have not slowed down in any way in terms of the talent acquisition thing. It's been hard to mesh it together. They had bad injury luck last year, really horrible injury luck. But this year, I think I like what Dane Altman's done because he's a little less reliant on these one and dones. They've brought in, you know, one or two per year McDonald's All-American type recruits, and it's felt like they've always catered their team around it and then wound up being like, uh-oh, these guys aren't good enough. And I like that this year, it seems like they were able to kind of recruit over those guys a little bit. That went away slightly by the Devin Cambridge decommit. We talked at the time about Devin Cambridge committing, which being kind of weird for them, but with KJ Evans. But they will not be quite as reliant on these five stars as they've been in the past. But they bring in three really excellent top 40 recruits. Mookie Cook, who has been injured all summer and I think is probably going to come off the bench and not play a huge role this year. KJ Evans, who was not necessarily my type of number one overall type player, which at one point that's how he was being billed. But he's a nice player, big forward with skill level, potential NBA guy down the line. And then the guy I'm most excited about for this year is Jackson Shellstad, who's a local kid. I think a guy that has a chance to make a Peyton Pritchard-style impact on Oregon when it's all said and done. Another in-state kid has been so productive everywhere he's been. I think that's a guy who has a chance to be really good. Add those guys with some transfers like Cario Aquendo, some returners like Jermaine Cousinard, Keyshawn Barthelemy, and Fally Dante back up front. I mean, this team is certainly not lacking in the talent department. It's just a matter of will it mesh in time? And I think that's an open question at this point, given the struggles of the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like deja vu all over again, right? Like, maybe they have a few more returners than they had in the past couple of seasons, but even though this talent level is NCAA tournament, I went NIT. I went just outside the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I'm 52nd, just outside as well.
Yeah, I'm 50. Let me pull that up real quick. I had them, yeah, number 50. So the reasons, I guess, why I'd say they wouldn't make the term, you know, mostly just being burned in the past, which, you know, isn't super rational. It's not super fair. But how many different iterations of very good transfers, very good recruits, it doesn't fit together? Can we see it? I mean, we can pull up. So last year was NIT.
My only main concern is that a lot of these transfers have never won anything. Like, Kari Okwendo is a losing player. Maybe that's mean, but, like, full stop. Like, Kari Okwendo does not contribute to winning.
I'm kind of out on calling transfers not winners, because, like, we need to define what a winner is. Right, like the sleepers guys were saying that Hakeem Hart was never on winning teams. But he was on the NCAA tournament, and they said Tyler Burton wasn't a winner, and that he made a second round in the NCAA tournament. But, like, is a dude who, you know, came from, you know, a Vermont team that wins the America East, is he a winner? But Hakeem Hart isn't? Like, who...
I guess my point would more so be that, like, Kari Okwendo was kind of in the doghouse at Georgia. He's inefficient. Like, that would not be the type of guy I was trying to have in the portal. I think it was a mistake to go at Kari Okwendo.
And, I mean, that was Jermaine Cousinard the year before.
Correct.
And they'll probably have a freshman point guy, Rochelle Stad. And then Bartholomew will play a lot. He played a lot last year. So I guess I'd say the returners, it's not a great fit, right? You got the two scoring guards. Aquendo's kind of a scoring guard. Shellstad's a freshman point guard. So that mix is a little funky. And then you'd say probably either KJ Evans starting at the four, who's more prospect than player, or going with Biddle and Dante together again. And Dante, despite putting up great stats last year, like he was 13-8, he's just never had that impact that we saw when he was dominating EYBL before he reclassed up. Like, the stats have been there, just never really translated there.
He had a good year last year. Really good. I will point out...
Where's the team success?
Oh, no. That's true. I will point out this on Mr. Okwendo. Last year, Georgia was 18 points per 100 possessions better with him out than in.
And I do want to say, in fairness to Mr. Altman, I didn't realize, but so he had the NIT the past 2 years. The 2 years before that, he won the conference.
Yes.
I thought there was a drop. I think I forgot the year that was canceled to COVID. Because then the year before that is when they barely made it and then made the Sweet 16, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, so not quite the downturn that I had remembered in my brain, Oregon, but it does feel like we've done this a couple of times with the great recruits, the transfers are mostly a new team, and the mix doesn't really come together. So, again, it's probably not rational. It's probably something if I saw somebody else do to a team that I was high on, I'd be losing my shit. But personally, I'm going right outside the NCAA tournament for Oregon.
Fair enough. All right, next up is Arizona State. Arizona State, as we said, kind of surprised to make the NCAA tournament last year. Bobby Hurley was kind of left for dead, the hot seat. People didn't think he was going to survive. Again, they had a half-court shot with Desmond Cambridge sneaking into the dance. Win a game, actually beat Nevada in the play-in game, and then nearly beat TCU were winning most of that game, and then TCU kind of found a way down the stretch. But doesn't feel like that result has really changed the status quo for Bobby Hurley. They have not had a great offseason. They had a lot of transfers out of the program. I was told that NIL and promises not kept was part of that. One of the reasons that they struggled with retention was guys did not receive what they were told they would receive. Not sure if that potentially trickled down into their recruiting this spring, because it certainly didn't seem like they recruited as high of a level in the portal as they have in the past. Their haul this year, names like Adam Miller, two-time transfer, needs a waiver, was not very good at LSU last year. They went and got Kamari Lands from Louisville, Bryant Celebenge from Tulsa, there was a historically bad Tulsa team. They added Bryson Long from Houston Christian, and then Zane Meeks from San Francisco. That is not a overly talented contingent, particularly compared to having Desmond Cambridge and Devin Cambridge and Warren Washington and guys of that nature. This team takes a step back talent-wise. I do like Frankie Collins as a point guard. I think he'll have a big year. I like Jemiah Neal. But to me, this is a bottom three team in this league. And if that's the case, I think we're staring down certainly the end for Bobby Hurley.
Even though they made the tournament last year, you think this a bad year would sink him?
Yes.
Yes, like when I was watching some Celebenge highlights over the summer, I thought that was a nice style of player. He was obviously very productive at Tulsa, but when you take a step back, and I mean Tulsa was so bad, where it's not even like winning player versus losing player. It was like somebody's got to get these points, kind of guy.
Correct. They were horrific.
Gaffney, he still hasn't put it all together from being a top 50 recruit way back when.
Yeah, I don't know how he's still here.
He's been around forever. From our Ohio State commit. I really like Jemiah Neal. I'm not sure how much he moves the needle, but he looks athletic. He looks explosive whenever I saw him last year. Frankie Collins coming back for year three. He should be one of the best point guards in the conference. So that's the positives there. The negatives, I think their overall talent level is low compared to the rest of the league, even to like Cal and maybe even Utah. Adam Miller, who on paper should be their best player, needs a waiver.
You think Adam Miller is better than Frankie Collins?
Let's pull up the stats here.
I would vehemently disagree with that. Now, it is probably unfair to Miller to judge him on a terrible LSU team with injuries. I mean, he was coming off the ACL, but Adam Miller shot 34% from the field last year.
Maybe Collins is better than I remembered. If you put a gun to my... No, this is pretty much what I thought. The conference play, he was 10 points, 4 assists, and 36 from 3. Yeah. Good season.
Yeah, he was better than I thought he'd be, actually. And he was much more reined in.
But certainly they have not replaced the talent that they've lost. I mean, Desmond Cambridge was such an explosive scorer. DJ Horn's a great scorer. Devin Cambridge is, one of the best defenders. Warren Washington, great rim protector. So they certainly have not replaced the talent they've lost. Malachi Davis was the top JUCO guy. I guess we'll see there. But Kamari Lands did not impressed me at all at Louisville. I mean, Zane Meeks was a role player in the WCC, so Sean Phillips couldn't get on the court at LSU. Big man, so, steeper learning curve, but we'll see. Akeel Watson took a huge tumble down the rankings. Braylon Green, I think he left SoCal Academy, like, midseason. So it's a weird group. It's a little short on talent compared to the rest of the league, despite having one of the best point guards in Frankie Collins. I think probably Adam Miller is their best player. Even after you're a protest, and they need a waiver for him.
Yeah. I have the team outside the top 100. I have them 107th.
I also put them outside the top 100. I didn't rank past there, but they would be right there. Call them 101, I guess.
Well, next up we have
Washington. Who's the next Arizona State coach, we think? What about Stan Johnson?
If Stan Johnson has a good year, sure.
I like this Loyola Marymount team. I was looking at them the other day.
Good guards.
Anyway,
Stan Johnson had two good years and one bad one. This year is a big one for him.
Ton of size too, right? They have like 272 guys.
Yeah.
Sorry. Anyway, moving on.
All right. Next is Washington State. Washington State last year started slow, was 5-9 in the league at one point, and then rattled off some wins down the stretch, run six straight to finish 11-9. Part of that was schedule. They had Washington at home, Oregon State at home, an Oregon team that was waffling, then Stanford, Cal, and Washington to wrap the year. So those games were out there to be won. That being said, Washington State won them. Now, and again, I mean, this is not a program where it's not a program where it's easy to win. They've now been top 75 in KenPom two straight years and in the NIT two straight years. Again, that's not nothing. I think the thing that they have run into, which is always going to be a problem at a tough place to win when you're rebuilding, is they just cannot seem to retain. They don't have the ability to retain and build up too much, right? Like 2 years ago, they built this pretty good team with, you know, Michael Flowers and Tyrell Roberts and F.A. Abagidi and Noah Williams. Williams doesn't have the great year. He transfers. Abagidi goes pro. Roberts transfers. Flowers is graduating. You bring back Gay. Gay has the big year. He goes. Bamba, bring him back. He has a big year. He goes. Right. Even you bring in a transfer like Justin Powell, you get an early entry. The margin is just so slim. And you know, I think they're doing a relatively similar deal this year where they bring in Joe Yesufu and Isaac Jones, these transfers, their one-year commitments. They're talented enough that, you know, they probably keep this team competitive. But I just don't know how you get over the hump with things like that. And they've got some interesting, you know, rolls of the dice, right? We like Yesufu. We like Kamani Winsu. We like Jalen Wells, the Division II player coming in. Had a huge number, like 23-8. But to elevate past what they've been, which is an NIT fringe, I don't know how you do it with the current resources there.
Right. It's almost like you're a mid-major where you need the stars to align. Right. Your Drake, your Wyoming, your Nevada, right, where you just need the right year where you won your 50-50 games in the non-con, and that sets you up to collect your 10 seed. I think so what's holding me back with this Washington State team, because you mentioned I'm all in on the Yesufu redemption arc here. Mullins had a good year last year. Yakimovsky's been good. Quinn So, popular guy with the draft guys and everything. The front court looks good on paper. Isaac Jones was like an analytical monster where, like, whenever you would check T-Rank in Portal Combat, he was like always at the top of the list. Like, who is this guy? Like, I haven't heard anything about him. And he kind of unceremoniously pops to Washington State with little fanfare. So I think they could have used like a, honestly, maybe Bamba was the missing piece. You know, start Yesufu with Bamba, and then have Mullins at the three and bring Yakimovsky and Quinso off the bench. You know, maybe that was the answer, but I think that they're one perimeter scorer short. So I think that they're going to be back in the NIT again.
Yeah. I have them 10th in the league. I think still in like a decent spot nationally. But I like some of these kind of, I have them 88th nationally. I like some of these other kind of fringe Pac-12 teams a little bit better. But yeah, I think anywhere in that like 6 to 10 feels right for this Washington State group.
I have them 8th, 69th. No, sorry. 8th and 71st.
All right. Next, we have Utah. Has been kind of a similar script, and the talent acquisition just hasn't been quite good enough. They've done a nice job of, you know, Craig Smith's a good coach, obviously. They've generally won the games they should, although last year they really faded down the stretch. But you look at this roster and you're relatively underwhelmed, and they haven't been able to quite break through and have that big piece to really push them over the top. They tried with Ray J. Dennis, and at one point it seemed like they were going to break through there. And if they had gotten him to go with Brandon Carlson and some of the guys they have back, maybe this is a different team, a different story. But, you know, I think this team is just kind of capped NIT-wise talent. Unless one of these guys really jumps out, they just have not recruited under Craig Smith at a high enough level outside of retaining Carlson year over year to really break through in my mind.
Yeah, so the three man we guys were talking about, and I'd completely forgotten this, that, you know, we're looking at mid-January, and Utah looks like they're going to make the NCAA tournament.
They were right on the bubble, yeah.
And then Madsen gets hurt, and the wheels fell off. Looking at this team, I agree. The talent, this team might be less talented than Arizona State. Close.
Yeah.
But if Devion Smith doesn't get a waiver, then they're really short in terms of depth, right? Because without Smith, then you're starting Forster and Erickson. Is that right?
Probably, yeah. Maybe Cole Bajima.
Right, and then Bajima, Madsen, and Brandon Carlson round out the lineup. It's not a certainly not a very athletic team, although you have I mean, Carlson's a very good athlete for five.
I think the thing I come back to with this group is, like, I want some upside swings. Like, where's the guy that, like, man, like it just feels like they punted and took, like, the safe bet too many times, right? Like, Cole Bajima and Lawson Lovering being your portal guys, even Davion Smith. Like, Davion Smith is 8-5 on a terrible Georgia Tech team. Like, they're just like, all right, this guy's, like, a competent enough high major rotation player. We're taking him. Like, give me some juice. Like, give me, like, the 15-point-per-game guy at, you know, Sacramento State that I can be excited might be the guy, right?
We've seen a lot of Bajima, right? He's not, like, a difference maker.
Correct.
We've seen a lot of Ben Carlson. He's not a high major player. We've seen a lot of Raleigh Worcester, you know, going back to Utah State. He's a nice glue guy, but as a starting point guard on the Pac-12 team, like, that's not going to happen. And, you know, right, we've seen a lot of Devion Smith, and waiver, no waiver. That's not a difference maker either. They're just going to, like, slide into, you know, I don't know if the Pac-12 plays 18 or 20 games, but, like, a 7-13 or 6-14 season here.
I have 9th in the league, and that's, like, low 80s nationally. Excuse me, no, I have him 79th nationally. I like Smith. I will say, like, I would be scared of this Big 12 move coming, because if they don't find a way to acquire talent at a higher level, I just don't know. Like, if you can't do it when you're playing Cal and Stanford and Oregon State, I don't know how you're going to do it when you're playing against Kansas and Houston and Baylor and yada, yada, yada.
Well, the Big 12 is going to build quite a bottom.
That's true.
Right? You can have Utah. You can have BYU. You can have Central Florida. We'll see what happens with Arizona State and West Virginia with their either Hurley or their new coaches, right? And then Cincinnati is, you know, it looks like they're going to pull in a really nice recruiting class. I think that they might end up getting Tyler Betsy. And they got Tyler McKinney, who's a nice player. And, you know, maybe they'll get another highly rated guy as well. So they're moving the needle recruiting, but we gotta see it on the court. But let's say that you know, BYU, Utah, Central Florida, Cincinnati, Arizona State. I mean, we're building the old Big East with the haves and the have-nots, or even what the ACC was a few years ago, before the bottom kind of overtook the middle and kind of cannibalized it from the inside.
It's a good point. I think when you look at like the talent acquisition game, I think it's different in the Big 12, even with the new schools, and Utah's going to have to figure it out.
I'm 86th. So yeah.
Next we have Colorado. Colorado got somehow the entire national media all decided that Colorado was like 22nd in the country and the way too early. Like, everyone decided, all right, we're putting Colorado. They didn't do enough in the spring to really, like, keep up, I don't think. But I still think this looks like a tournament team, despite the fact that they were very mediocre last year, 18 and 17 overall. But they bring back two really good players in KJ Simpson and Tristan Da Silva. You bring in the highest-rated recruit in program history in Cody Williams. You had a plug-and-play starting center in Eddie Lampkin. Who is, I believe we should probably call him Georgetown legend, Eddie Lampkin.
He definitely committed to Georgetown. That definitely happened.
The talent level drops off after that top four. But that is enough of a group that I think probably belongs in the top four of the Pac-12 and is an NCAA tournament team.
Yeah, so I put them at 37. I think Lampkin's a very good player. Obviously, Da Silva's a top 100 player in the country. Simpson, I know he's got efficiency issues, but he was still pretty young, so I think he's going to be an upper echelon Pac-12 player this year. The real question is, Cody Williams, is he more prospect or player? I've seen very mixed reports on that. I've seen people say, oh, they're only ranking him so high because his brother, obviously Jalen Williams, of Santa Clara, and it's like all upside. And then I see, oh no, he's actually really good. I've seen opinions all over the board on Cody Williams this year. I think I'm leaning more prospect than player, so I'm going Colorado at 37. But you know that starting five is gonna be very good, and then they have Hadley, who's more of a glue guy type, who started a bunch and played a ton last year. But they have a couple guys off the bench who played decent minutes as well. But I think your mileage on Colorado depends on if you think Cody Williams is more prospect or player.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Cody Williams is probably more like a top 50 recruit than top 10 recruit. Part of that's normal, this class stinks thing, and part of it's just the name recognition. And it was one of those where he came out of nowhere, where he was like a four star and all of a sudden he was like, everyone's like, this guy's really good. Oh wait, this guy is really good. Now we're gonna make him a top five player. And it's like, no, slow down a little bit. But he is talented, and he's just a rare like type of talent to get at a place like Colorado. And he's the perfect like intrigue, because even if they had done nothing this spring, if they had just brought in KJ, if they just brought back KJ, Tristan, and brought in Eddie Lampkin, and then just had, I don't know, like Javon Hadley starting over Cody Williams, I think that'd still be a bubble team in the preseason, right?
Yeah, I mean, they were in the NIT bringing back, you know, their best players. So
NIT team running it back with two really good players, including a potential first-round pick and Tulio Da Silva. So I'm 38th nationally. I feel good about it. Torvik has him 25th. Where did you say you had him, Brad?
37.
All right. We are remarkably close on that one. So keeping it moving. Washington. We've probably spent more oxygen on Washington than we would have ever anticipated this offseason. But they've had just like a fascinating spring where Hopkins was hot. They basically flipped their whole roster over other than Keon Brooks and Braxton Mia. A lot of transfers, including Keon Menefield, which felt like a crushing blow at the time. Now doesn't feel like such a big deal. They have interesting buy low guy like Sevier Wheeler. They had shooting in Moses Wood. They had a mid-major guy in Nate Calmise, the big shooter, big scorer. And then Rutgers transfer Paul Mulcahy as a glue guy. This group, I think I've probably come around to the idea that they should start Moses Wood over Wesley Yates. I was a big fan of Wesley Yates, but I'm wondering if that was sample size related, because it seems that a lot of people who watched him more are a lot more skeptical of him than the game that I saw, where I was like, okay, this guy is sick. So I also think the shooting makes the fit better to start Wood at the four and Brooks at the three than to do Yates at the three and Brooks at the four. But, you know, I don't quite know. But the big picture here is this team is very big. They're very talented. They have a lot of playmaking. They don't necessarily have a lot of shooting. And they have a coach that we question.
It's funny because I think Trilly and his like transfer portal recruiting roundup column from a couple days ago, he had like an anonymous quote in there that was like, there's some coaches that are throwing around insane amounts of money, and those are the guys who are going to get fired. And I assume they were referring to Mike Hopkins there. I'm not really sure of the correlation. Like, you wouldn't necessarily think the guys throwing around the most money are going to get fired. Because how else would they get it without having some level of confidence from the donors? But if, you know, the connecting the dots, Mike Hopkins was supposedly throwing out a lot of money for Mulcahy and Moses Wood and all these guys, and he might get fired after this year. Probably will get fired if they finish how we think they will. And, you know, he's blown some pretty talented rosters. This front court, though, is pretty good. Look at Kep Nang back from injury. Braxton Mia was one of the biggest surprises in the country last year. And Brooks Saniki averaged like 18 points a game, which is kind of crazy. The fit here is way off, right? So you have a power forward that has the ball in his hands. He's scoring all these points. Mulcahy is like the big creator wing that you want to play with an undersized scoring guard. But Wheeler is also a ball-in-hand guy. He's a creator type. And Wesley Yates is a scorer as well. To your point, I think, yeah, getting the shooting of Moses Wood in there, bringing either Yates or Mulcahy off the bench, I think would be a good move. Overall, though, Keon Brooks and Sevier Wheeler being your two best players, yeah, kind of two Kentucky cast-offs, I don't know.
I think this team has NCAA tournament talent. They don't have crazy talent. I think
this is also not a great zone roster, which I guess he doesn't play as much zone anymore. But
I think it's a good zone roster outside of Wheeler.
How big is Yates?
Big. Like 6'5".
Okay. Mulcahy and Mia are great zone guys. And I guess Moses would be in tall and, you know, not athletic too. But
yeah, I don't know. I couldn't quite get there to put him in the tournament. I wound up with them 70th. No. Excuse me. 61st.
I'm 69. So like NIT, but yeah, it won't save Mike Hopkins' job.
NIT will not do it. No, they got to. I think this is turn of year bust. So, all right, next we have Stanford, another hot seat situation. 14-19 last year. This was a big disappointment. I mean, this was a team that I think on paper a lot of people thought was getting to the NCAA tournament in the preseason. They had, you know, Harrison Ingram and Spencer Jones back. They brought in the transfer and Michael Jones, and just the weakness at point guard and the weakness at center really, really hurt. It just wasn't good enough. Their defense was atrocious. Part of it being that they just had bad luck with three-point shooting. Teams took a lot of threes against them and made a lot of threes against them.
But they also were so unathletic.
Correct. But they also gave up. They also had a very high opponent free throw percentage, which I know some people will read as like a luck stat. I do think Stanford was unluckily bad defensively, but they're also just bad defensively. I think it cut both ways. How do you fix it? Well, they think they got better at point guard with Jared Bynum. Those who listen to this podcast regularly know that Brad has opinions about Jared Bynum. My one opinion on Jared Bynum is that he is clearly better than Michael O'Connell or Issa Silva.
Yeah, you know, having watched, 100 Bynum games in the past 3 years, he can't be your best player. You have to put up with incredible shooting streaks. His defense is pathetic. He's a good passer, and he's a pretty good finisher around the rim. And like overall in conference play last year, he shot 41% from three. But you're going to have games where he goes 1-for-9. And you kind of have to keep throwing him out there. I honestly think he either definitely reads Twitter and or the message boards and like gets all funked out of people saying he sucks when he misses a shot. I honestly think it's mostly mental. His issues. He had an incredible 2 months where he was like one of the best players in the country in 21-22. I don't think he can. Or he's supposed to be the leading creator on this team, right? That's not gonna bode well.
Yeah, so that is the main concern. Is they don't have a lot of creation. Stojakovic comes in as a freshman. He's a big-time shooter, not necessarily a big-time creator. They have Cannon Carlisle coming in. I don't know what to expect from him.
He took a tumble in the rankings by the end, too.
Yes, struggled, I think, at OTE. And their center spot's still an issue. I mean, with Maxime Reyno there, they didn't address that in the portal. Again, they have so many challenges. And we've talked about it a little on the pod this summer, but like, I was told every other Pac-12 starter last year, there are two that could have gotten into Stanford. Like they are recruiting against such insane restriction. But that's the reality, and they need better front court play if they're gonna win games this year. I will note Brandon Angel was like sneaky amazing last year down the stretch. Brandon Angel in the final 12 games last year, February and March, averaged 14 points, 5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, shot 65% from the field and 69% from three. He is like underratedly really good. Spencer Jones is good. Stojakovic. I feel similarly how I felt with them last year, which is two through four are good, 1 and 5 are bad, except I think one is okay now. So I have Stanford 64th nationally. I think T-Rank is like weirdly high on them.
Yeah, they have them like 33 or something.
T-Rank 32 in my notes. So I didn't quite get there, but I did have them as a top 75 team. And I actually think if they like make the NIT again, that Jared Haas will stick.
So they were 157 in KenPom defense last year.
Yes.
Arguably, they got worse defensively, going from Ingram to Stojakovic and from O'Connell to Bynum.
I mean, I don't know that that really moves the needle defensively either way. Maybe Ingram a little bit, but.
I have them NIT as well. I mean, this team's going to shoot the lights out.
Yes.
Angel, you mentioned his number down the stretch. Overall in conference play, he was 44% from deep. Jones is over 40%. Both Michael and Spencer Jones. Obviously, Bynum and Big East play was over 40% last year. I mean, even right now, hasn't lived up to his Gavoni tweet hype. Was 10-6 in conference play. But I had Stanford 57 nationally.
So I think we're both generally buying then, right?
Well, I thought this would mean no NCAA tournament, therefore the end for Jared Haas. Therefore, Jared Bynum doesn't save them, and they go another year without making the tournament. So I was categorizing this year as a bust, but seems you think, given their challenges and inability to take transfers, that we should celebrate 57.
Celebrate may be strong, but like, it doesn't completely suck. All right, next we have Oregon State, speaking of completely sucking.
I mean, just like completely boring too. Right? They're not, it's not Louisville, this isn't Georgetown last year. Not even Butler last year, where they're getting their asses blown out every other game in the Big East play. You know, they're running it back. People really like Jordan Pope. I remember, whether it was Shaka or Wojo, I don't remember, but loved Dexter Akiano once upon a time. But, like, this team is just so blah.
They just have legitimately no ability to recruit. And I don't know if that's – I mean, obviously, I'm sure a lot of that's NIL. But this was an issue before, too, right? Like, they just have no talent. Like, this team is this team is average Mountain West talent. Maybe even below average Mountain West talent, actually. Yes, below average Mountain West. Given that sixth in the Mountain West is like UNLV, who has four like former high major starters.
This team isn't that crazy how like they don't even have as much talent as like Butler or Central Florida or Cal, right? Like, or Washington State. Yeah.
It makes sense that, I mean, it's a really difficult place to recruit to. Kind of the middle of nowhere. And Tinkle is not exactly the most like exciting guy. And they haven't won, and they have no money.
Even, you know, just by being a power conference school.
Correct.
I would expect the halo to be a little bit bigger.
They just don't do anything. Like, they don't even like recruit in the portal. Like there should be like they should be able to beat these Mountain West schools for kids, and they seemingly cannot.
Like, I think I would rather have every Butler transfer than the guys Oregon State took. Or, like, give me Andre Screen and Landon Moore on this team. DJ Davis.
Yes. Agreed.
For what you know, whatever reason, yeah, they can't even recruit as well as Colorado State and these middle-of-the-pack Mountain West teams.
I have them in like the 160s nationally. Jordan Pope is good. That's really all I have to say on this.
How has Chole Merrill been? Has that just been, oh, well, remember when that guy was the number two recruit in the country? Yeah, it looks like that's where we're at here.
I think he's just always hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, because last year he played 9 games, started 8 of them. 32% from the field. 2 points, 2 rebounds. 2.6 fouls per game.
I do think as well, like, they recruit so far off the map. Like, let me read to you some names. This is what I have. So I have their starters is Jordan Pope, Christian Wright, Dexter Acanno, Tyler Bilodeau, and Michael Ratai. Those were guys who were there last year. Like, they're all, you should know them, I guess, a little bit, right? Let me read to you. I have here. I'll do seven through 13 since Justin Verschellen was at Arizona State. Nate Meathoff, Jaden Stevens, KC Ibekwe, Gavin Mars, Thomas Ndong, Troll Marial, and Dejon Craig, who was added like last week. Like, other than Troll Marial, like, we follow this stuff so closely, and I have not heard of any of these kids, like, in recruiting at all. It's not like, oh, who are they in the battle with? Like, they literally just pull kids out of the sky.
Yeah, that is true. And, like, the Ratej kid looks like he might be something.
He's fine. Yeah, he's good.
But, like, their guys last year, like, Reuni, right? He didn't even start at San Francisco.
Correct.
Glenn Taylor was a good recruit. He was, like, a top 150 recruit. Jordan Pope was pretty close to that as well. Acanno could not get on the floor on a bad Marquette team. Rochelin couldn't get on the floor on a bad Arizona State team, right? Like, Christian Wright couldn't get on the floor on a Tom Crean Georgia team. So, they are beyond hope. Maybe the Mountain West can zap them to life. Although they might get relegated.
We shall see.
To Mount West B.
I think that'll be fun, by the way. I'm in on that.
Will it be like AAU teams where they have, like, the elite team is black and the B team is red and the C team is white? Like, that Mount West black and Mount West red?
That'd be really funny. All right. Last is Cal. Cal is, like, the opposite of Oregon State, and that they have been really bad, but, like, they are now, like, exceedingly interesting. They hire Mark Madsen, who's not only is he, like, the up-and-coming, very good mid-major coach and the former NBA player, but he's also the Stanford guy. So you go crosstown. They all of a sudden are recruiting at a high level. They've seemed to strip away all the academic restrictions that make it hard to win there, at least early on. This team is, I still think, like, not great talent, but, like, has more talent than I think Utah. I think probably has more talent than Arizona State. Probably has more talent than Washington State. Like, I think Cal has built the eighth most talented roster in the Pac-12, which is a hilarious assertion. But it's also, like, kind of important, right? Like, that's...
This team should be good offensively.
Yeah, I mean, Fardaws and Jalen Tyson is a great deal. Fardaws is in much better shape. He's lost weight. Jalen Tyson is, you know, I think probably a little bit, probably a little over, probably was a little overrated as a recruit, but I still think he's a good player.
And then Jalen Cohn can score. Devin Asu can score. Keontae Kennedy can really shoot.
And defend. I guess you could
quibble with the fit, but if you're Cal, I mean, just run out some scores and try to make it happen. Fardaws really needs redemption. He was not good last year. He looks heavy. Obviously was hurt for half.
He's down like 30 pounds.
Yeah. And then these bench guys are like the former Cal holdovers. I think Jalen Celestine was supposed to start last year before he got hurt. Grant Newell, I think, started. I also need to check if all these guys are still on the team.
They are.
Because every Pac-12 preview, I've been surprised with a roster error on my own depth charts. Getting back to Bryce Wills for Stanford, where I thought he was back. And he wasn't.
They really like the kid Rodney Brown. He's very skinny, but they think he's like a pro. At some point.
So. I've seen Devin Curtis play.
They like Devin Curtis well.
He played for SoCal. He's huge and he moves pretty well. He's just not very skilled, I don't think. SoCal was kind of a mess, though. He was like playing the four a lot.
Look, if Cal plays in the postseason this year, it's remarkably impressive, right?
Yeah, I just think it's literally like a thrown together roster with a bunch of scores. I don't think that the defense is going to be very good. The fit's not great. And overall, the talent level, I mean, Tyson and Fardaw were on a Texas Tech team that wasn't great last year, and Cohn was just lighting up mid-majors. So I have them 10th, one spot behind Utah, both nationally and in the Pac-12. It's like 86.
Yeah. I have them 76th nationally. I think that's 8th in the league as well. I'm intrigued, right? Like, I do think, like, the long-term question is they got Tyson and Fardaw's at least partially because of the connection to assistant coach Matt Scherbinski, who's at Texas Tech. And Fardaw's obviously had played for Mark Madison already. You lose, like, are they going to be able to consistently acquire that type of talent long-term? I don't know. The ACC move probably helps there marginally, but I tend to believe in Madsen. I like the staff that they put together. I like the roster year one compared to like what you would expect. And they're interesting now, which is so far removed from the Mark Fox era that I think that's a great sign.
Yeah, they were 3-whatever last year. Not good. Only Louisville was able to save them from being a national laughingstock. But they should be better this year.
Yeah. So big picture, I have 4 tournament teams, Arizona, USC, UCLA, and Colorado. I have Oregon just outside. And again, it's just a question of, do we think that this group of like Washington, Stanford, Cal, and Utah, and maybe Washington State, are they bubble teams? Are they NIT bubble teams? Are they something in between that, right? I think that's the range, right? And if they're bubble teams, then this league is pretty darn good this year, because that means they probably get 6-7 bids. If they are NIT bubble teams, it seems this league is pretty bad.
And I'm kind of conflicted here on Oregon. Where I feel like I shouldn't be irrationally punishing them. Yeah, at the same time, is this team even that much more talented than some of my other bubble teams like Iowa and Xavier and Iowa State? And it's a little different.
Yeah, that much
Boise, New Mexico. Sorry, what'd you say?
Yeah, I don't think you're that much more talented, no.
Yeah, so I guess I'll leave him out, outside looking in.
Any, we mentioned kind of throughout, but some hot seaters to watch. We've got certainly Hopkins, Haas, Bobby Hurley, those three for sure. We have, I don't know, I don't think I would say there's anyone else that's like hot. Like Wayne Tinkle theoretically should be on the hot seat, but I don't know if they have the money to pay him.
They honestly should have fired him after making the Elite Eight.
Correct.
I mean, like, rationally, that was probably, you know, stripping all emotions and fan response out, that was probably the move. But
here's a question, and I don't actually think this is like a realistically fair thing, because I don't think this is the ceiling at Oregon State, or I don't think it's the realistic goal at Oregon State, but like, would you rather 4 years of being between the bubble and the NIT, or 1 Elite Eight and 3 of these like catastrophe dumpster fire years?
See, I think I would. I think I'd rather be the bubble every year. What
I agree
complicates this question for Oregon State was the year that they made the Elite Eight. It's not like they had a very good regular season. Like, right. That was an auto bid. And it was COVID nonsense.
Right. You couldn't even go watch them in the Elite Eight.
Right. Like, if they went out and got a 3 seed and then made the Elite Eight, then I think we have a conversation. Right. But to be a 12 seed and make the Elite Eight, I think not a bubble team every year.
I think the other problem, too, is, like, they just have no hope. Like, it'd be one thing, like, being a bubble team, you wake up in the morning for 8 months in the offseason, like, man, like, you know, if this guy breaks right, we could compete to do X. If this guy does this, we could do Y, right? Like, if you're an Oregon State fan, what's your reason to be at all excited about college basketball this year? Maybe
it
Jordan
is funny.
Average 18 point game.
If you go to any message board where either the team is bad, they just lost a recruit, or a player transfers, the top thread on the board be like, man, college basketball is not the same anymore. This damn transfer portal is ruining everything.
It's so good.
Teams that are good, though, you don't see those posts.
Correct.
Any ideas on who should be the next? Oh, well, how about this? If Oregon State moves on from Tinkle, now they're going to the Mountain West. They're going to offer less money, obviously. Who do you think their next coach should be?
That's a good question. I mean, I would go after like a Stan Johnson.
At that point, though, is it worth leaving Loyola Marymount?
I mean, was it worth it for Kyle Smith to leave San Francisco?
That was Pac-12. This is Mount West.
True. That's a good point.
Because they can't offer the same money, because they don't have the same money coming in.
But they'll still offer over $1 million, probably, and Stan Johnson probably makes like $500.
If you're Stan Johnson, though, you would rather have Arizona State. Because his big thing when he was at Marquette was he was the Arizona guy. He brought in Marcus Howard. He brought in Oso.
I have a good name for you if they're good. David Patrick.
Sacramento State, yeah.
Really good assistant coach. Has recruited internationally really well. Recruited Australia at a very, very high level. Very connected, very engaging personality. If he can win like 20 games at Sac State this year, I think that'd be a very attractive hire.
And then Washington.
Yes.
I think maybe Mr. Leon at Boise finally making the move.
I think they're going to be going for Flash.
Flash hit Washington. Now they're in the Big Ten. Does that open them to a new candidate pool? I mean, who's even a flashy guy that would want Washington?
Jason Hart.
Where is he now?
G League Ignite.
Oh, still?
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was still there.
Another one would be Brandon Roy.
What is he up to?
He's a high school coach, I believe. I think he's
after the high major assistant fails, we're going to go to high school coach.
He coaches at Garfield High School, which is the biggest program in Seattle.
High school coach to the Big Ten.
I don't know that he will get the job, but I am telling you that will be a thing.
Wait, I mean, he was obviously a great NBA player. He was a great Washington player.
We shall see. Yeah, they'd be able to pull a good candidate, though. Like, Richard Pitino would love that job. Don't think he'd get it, but he'll try.
New Mexico should be good this year.
Very good.
They got their feet wet with success last year.
They're very talented.
And then Stanford, you think James Jones?
Mitch Henderson.
Okay.
It is interesting. Like, I do think they're going to have to go more academic. It's just, it's so tricky.
There was a time in the offseason where I got destroyed by my group chat for pitching James Jones to be the Providence coach.
James Jones is a good coach.
Right. Remember, at the time, the media, like Jeff Goodman, was pushing that Providence was broke and had no money. But it doesn't seem like it was actually the case. So I was thinking, we need a ball coach. Give me James Jones, give me Kyle Smith.
I love Kyle Smith.
Yeah.
I think Kyle Smith is a name to watch being on the move next year, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I do not think he's Mountain West.
Washington State. I don't think he's staying at Washington State to be in the Mountain West. I think he'd rather go. He would rather coach like Nevada, I think, than coach Washington State.
I mean, he would be good at Arizona State.
I agree, but I don't like if they miss the NCAA tournament, who's hiring him? Right, like, how do you walk into like the fan base at a real high major that like cares about winning, and be like, we've got our guy. Here's this white guy who's like never been at a big school, whose record at Washington State is
good for Washington State, but
7 games over .500.
You couldn't put that on the press release. So you think? Yeah, so like let's say hypothetically that Leon Rice goes to Washington. You think he would go to Boise, even if Washington State is going to be in the same league?
Yeah, he would take Boise, I think. I also don't think he's stuck out west. Like, he's coached everywhere. Remember, he coached at Columbia. He's from Maryland, but I grew up in Houston. Like, he's everywhere. Like,
right, but what are the other – right, the Mountain West right now is in a good spot. Like, we talk in Atlantic 10, like if Anthony Grant stepped down, but would Dayton want, you know, like, where else would he go?
I mean, first of all, he'd love Stanford. Stanford would be the job. He can't get it, though. If Stanford hired an Ivy guy, like if Stanford hired James Jones, I bet Kyle Smith would be interested in Yale.
You just kind of broke my brain.
I know I did. But he was at Columbia. Yale's much easier to win at. You win at Yale for like 3 years, then you get like a really good job.
That's way too galaxy brain. Right, because like the only other similar one was it Ed DeCellis went from Penn State to Navy? Is that thing?
But I think DeCellis kind of got pushed out the door.
I just can't see the Washington State head coach, even as a Mountain West team, going to the Ivy League. It just doesn't really it kind of short circuited me. What do Ivy coaches even make? I have no idea what they even make.
Not that much.
Like 200,000 or less?
They make more than that.
Yeah.
Like, what is Tommy Amaker?
Tommy
Amaker makes $750.
Tommy Amaker makes $750,000?
Yes.
I wouldn't expect these schools to care that much to pay so much, but because they have the money.
Correct. And also, like, there's always a few rich people, you know?
Remember when we thought Harvard was going to, like, explode with Bryce Aiken and
they were Seth rolling Towns? Talent, man. They were.
Robert Lewis, they had like all these top 100 recruits, and they did nothing with them.
We could have a whole podcast about this, but we should probably wrap up as we've derailed our conversation. But yes, I think if he could make, well, what would that number be? You know, $700,000 at Harvard, he would do $700,000 at Harvard over a 1.5 at Washington State.
We shall see.
That'll be an interesting one to track come search season.
Anything else you want to discuss on this pod?
We got our first waiver. Congrats to Woody Hooten. His lottery number was pulled.
Supposedly he had documented mental health. He was going close to home, and he had a death of a family member. So he checked a lot of boxes.
It's kind of unnerving that we've only had two public decisions and we're 40 days away, or whatever, 41 days away.
We got to get it. We got to get them soon. I mean, it's kind of now or never.
Yeah.
So hopefully we get some of this clarity, at least with the big names.
Right. I want Moussa Cisse, Brandon Murray, Adam Miller. Trying to think who else needs waivers.
Azeez Bandego, Jameel Reynolds.
Yeah, those are good ones. Efton Reed.
Efton Reed is a sneaky huge one, yeah. Primo Spears.
Good one.
Raekwon Battle. Cutis Wahab.
Cutis Wahab didn't graduate?
No.
Oof. David Green needs a waiver for URI. I don't think anybody cares. But as I'm scrolling. The Memphis guys like all need waivers, right? DeAndre Williams needs a wacky, unprecedented waiver.
DeAndre Williams wants to get his year back.
Yeah.
So, we shall see. 42 days till tip-off. We appreciate y'all listening. We'll catch you guys next week with another conference.